If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
One pitch, fastball pulled and
got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Mock draft review format, very, very important in fantasy baseball. And today, we're looking at a head-to-head points mock draft where 11 of the first 21 picks were starting pitchers. You will not.
And 21 of the first 48.
Hey, 11 of 21 is a higher percentage than 21 of 48. You will not find a more convincing stat than 11 of 21 were starting pitchers. Oh my gosh. Lucas Giolito went ahead of Jose Altuve, Aaron Judge, Xander Bogaerts, Bryce Harper, and Ryan Devers, and Rafael Devers, and Charlie Blackmon, and Anthony Rizzo. And I think when Scott took Lucas Giolito, I think everybody else in the draft was like, okay, let's take some hitters now. but that was just kind of crazy just to think about that. Also, 11 of 21 is a high ratio.
It hurt to make that pick. I can confirm. It hurt to make it.
You shouldn't have made it.
I disagree. I'm happy with the way things turned out.
Okay, I was not in this draft, but Scott and Chris were. Scott had the fifth pick. Chris had the 11th pick. Hey, Chris.
Hi, what's up?
Oh, you know, just got done talking about Mookie Betts like 12 hours ago. So here we are on Wednesday afternoon, and we're going to go through this 12-team head-to-head points league and talk about how valuable starting pitchers are in this format and how often you should get them. Talk about a team that Heath Cummings actually drafted and played out. It's one thing to talk about mock drafts, but last year, Heath Cummings in our podcast points league, same format as this, 12 teams. Let's just look at this team that he drafted. And I don't know if you remember how well he did. I looked it up before the show, but this was Heath's team that he drafted.
Wait, in what league?
This podcast league last year.
The podcast points league.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same format, 12-team points.
Okay.
And for all of you who are unfamiliar, 5 starting pitchers, 2 relief pitchers, and there are what we call SPARPs, starting pitcher as relief pitcher, guys like this year, Carlos Carrasco, Carlos Martinez, they have RP eligibility. They can be used as RPs, but they're more valuable than regular relief pitchers. 1 catcher, first base, second base, third base, shortstop, 3 outfielders, and a utility spot. So shallow league with 5 starters, 2 relievers, and those hitter spots. Okay, anyway, Heath had the 11th pick. He picked Gerrit Cole, Jacob deGrom, James Paxton, and Zach Greinke with his first 4 picks. He had 3 of the top 6 pitchers, starting pitchers, with his first 4 picks, plus James Paxton, who was great in the second half. His hitters, I hope you have a vomit bag. Abreu, Brantley, Haniger, McCutchen, Ramos, Gallo, Brian Dozier, Paul DeJong, Malik Smith, Scooter Jeanette, Younghoe Kang, Miguel Sano. I doubt he held on to Miguel Sano and got the productive version of Miguel Sano. But in addition to Cole, DeGrom, Paxton, and Greinke, he also got Tyler Glass now in like the 10th round or something. He got Zach Godley, Luke Weaver, and that's pretty much Josh Hader as a reliever. So amazing pitching, horrible hitting. How do you think Heath did last year? Horrible hitting on draft day.
He was 10-8.
Oh, Scott. You're supposed to guess.
Oh, sorry. I'm just looking it up. I didn't realize. He was 10-8.
He finished fifth, and then he made the semifinals. He lost in the semifinals.
Yeah.
Interesting strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty good year, and I would say that it sounds like he had some bad luck with hitters, certainly Scooter, Jeanette. And it sounds like maybe he targeted some hitters he shunted, too. But
it doesn't matter.
It as bad as his hitting was, the pitching was still enough to carry him on its own.
Yeah, and I wish I could look up the hitting he had in the fantasy playoffs or down the stretch, because it was so much different than, I mean, obviously he had Haniger and McCutcheon, and like Ramos was really bad, but it was so much different.
LeMahieu was on his team.
Oh.
He had Danny Santana.
Mm. That's
obviously a mid-season pickup.
Yeah, if you can be uncomfortable with your hitting on draft day and just say, I'm going to play the waiver wire, maybe this strategy works. Of course, if you draft four pitchers with your first four picks, Chris, doesn't mean you're going to do as well as Heath did, getting three of the top six.
Well, yeah, like the hit rate for pitchers is closer to half. And I mean, when you're dealing with a sample of four, you might hit three, and that works out really well. But on the whole, you should probably expect, you know, half of even the very good pitchers that you draft to not live up to expectations. And in that case, he probably got like a 95th percentile outcome for the four pitchers that he drafted collectively.
You know what's funny? Like,
you certainly can't expect that kind of result every time.
He took DeGrom and Gerrit Cole with his first two picks. The pick before DeGrom was Chris Sale. And the pitcher who went after Gerrit Cole three picks later was Corey Kluber. So if his team was you mean on draft day? Yeah, if he picked right, if he had picked Sale and Kluber, he would have had a horrible year. But he picked DeGrom and Cole. That's fit. Like, that is what is so frustrating about fantasy. Like, there's no problem at all with picking Sale and Kluber. And you would have had a really bad year if you had done that, probably.
One thing that makes it easier this year, though, and I don't exactly remember how the talent was distributed across starting pitcher last year, but like going, like just committing to first four picks need to be a pitcher. Like just making an extreme plan ahead of time like that and holding to it no matter what is always a bad way to go, or usually a bad way to go. I feel like there are enough pitchers with high-end potential that if you're looking to get four of them, it's not like you have to use your first four picks to do that. In this draft, I think I used, I know my first pick was on a hitter, right? And I think my fourth or fifth pick was on a hitter. And I still ended up with four good pitchers. So there is enough, like, genuinely, or at least they have the potential to be top tier pitchers and hitters as well, that there are going to be some available for you at a later point in the draft than was probably true last year. Some of both available to you.
Scott's first four picks out of the five spot were Bellinger, Bieber, Giolito, and Nola. So we'll get into that. And I think I do want to add this though, Scott. Last year, Heath was probably an outlier. This year, I think a lot of people are going to be in points leagues much more aggressive with starting pitcher than they were even last year. You know what I mean? Like, the pitchers are going to fly off the board. Maybe you really do need four of your first six picks were starting pitchers this year in this draft that you did last week.
Yeah. Did I say something?
No, I'm just saying you have to be very aggressive if you want four good starting pitchers.
Yeah.
You know how long you can wait. Cool. Okay, let's read an email real quick. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Email is from John. Hi, John. After the Angels acquired Jock Peterson yesterday, does that do anything to Joe Adell's value? Does this affect his value for 2019?
No. I think we've seen Jock Peterson play first base. If anything, maybe this represents an opportunity for the Angels to finally kind of pull the plug on Albert Pujols. You know, I mean, he's going to play a little bit at DH when Otani's not there, but, you know, Peterson does have the versatility to play a corner and a first base spot. I don't see any reason they would push Joe Adell back just because of Jock Peterson, a guy who is a good hitter but can't hit lefties.
What I was saying, yeah, I was agreeing with you. I wasn't saying, yeah, it changes his timetable, just to be clear. But I saw a lot of people asking that on Twitter. And the only way I think that makes sense is if you were convinced Adele was going to make the club out of spring training, which he was pretty bad when he got moved up to AAA last year. So I didn't think there was much chance of that. But I do think he's at a stage in his career where once he proves he's ready, he's up, and they will be able to find a spot for him, whether it's moving Peterson to first base or
something's going to happen.
Something else. Yeah.
Justin Upton struggled to stay healthy last season and wasn't any good. So there's no guarantee he bounces back. Jock Peterson can't play every day. Albert Pujols can't play every day. Shohei Ohtani can't play every day. They'll find some kind of way to make this work. And Joe Adele, you know, it could be someone gets hurt and Joe Adele gets the call. It could be it's May 15th and he's just crushing it in AAA. It is worth noting he's had struggles with strikeouts at AAA, and then when he was in the Arizona Fall League, he was a little underwhelming there as well. They sent him there at the end of the season. I think partially because he just didn't play all that much last year because of a hamstring strain early in the season. And, there's a little bit of risk in his profile for a young player. It's not quite as much risk, I think, as Luis Robert. He is also not going nearly as high, but it's similar upside.
Adele went 191st overall in this 12-team head-to-head points league. And that was the end of round 16, right in front of Kris Davis. Wow, what a fall from grace for Kris Davis. Interesting. I feel like I'm going to have a lot of Kris Davis this year. Just saying. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
It definitely seems like one of those picks that could either be a huge reward or just a total waste. It all depends on whether you think his collapse was skill related or health related.
Health,
and whether or not he's healthy now.
The single most consistent player in baseball for 3 or 4 straight years and then just has a horrible season. Health. What do you think?
And a hip seems like I'm not a professional baseball player or a doctor, but a hip injury seems like a pretty good reason to have a down year.
I agree, Dr. Towers. So, everybody, follow along online if you can. If you're listening to this today on Wednesday, February 5th, signing day, congratulations to all of the prospects who signed today. Go to cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball or just cbssports.com/fantasy and then click baseball. And there's a link you'll see immediately, head-to-head points, mock draft, or something like that. Try to follow along if you can. If you're listening to this later, just kind of search through there. Scroll down. It'll be somewhere in there. You'll find it. Okay, so first question is, how much should starting pitchers be pushed up in this format? But did you hear that 11 of the first 24 picks were pitchers?
21 of the first 48, actually.
It was very extreme. It was very extreme. So, yeah. What do you think?
And that's what I've been seeing, not just in this format, but I've been seeing it in Roto, too. You know, obviously extreme relative to what we're used to seeing in Roto. So maybe not 21 of the first 48 picks, but people, I plan to go heavy after starting pitching this year. And yet prior to this draft, I had not been doing it as well as most everybody else and had been dissatisfied with the way my pitching looked as a result.
Okay. So you went with 4 starting pitchers with your first 6. I didn't know if you were done there.
You have trouble figuring that out sometimes. Maybe it's me. Maybe I don't.
No, it's probably me. I was probably.
I think it's Scott. No offense.
Do I just
got a very particular style of talking? And oftentimes when I'm listening to the podcast, I have a moment where I'm like, "Did it cut out? did it drop?"
You know, I think sometimes I come to the end of a sentence and I'm not honestly not sure if I want to continue or not. But then I think, that makes it well enough, so I just don't say anything else.
Kris, how do you feel about starting pitchers in this?
Yeah, you want multiple elite starting pitchers.
That was a bad joke that I just made there. I stopped in the middle of a sentence. It didn't work. Yeah, how much more value do the pitchers have in this format?
Well, I'm sorry for messing up your joke. Yeah, I think you want multiple aces. The one thing that I will say, especially in this format this year, is there are just a boatload of really good starting pitchers as relief pitchers. And, you know, last night's trade pushed another one up the board. Kenta Maeda, who had been going fairly late in a lot of leagues, should have more innings potential this year now that he's with the Twins instead of the Dodgers. And so part of my strategy in my head-to-head points leagues is to heavily target Sparps. And in this one, I got Carlos Martinez and Julio Urias. They were actually, I think, my number three and number four pitchers drafted. And I was able to get them close to the double-digit rounds, I believe. So there's still some value there. And I think that could be a place where you could get a legitimate edge.
Okay. We'll come back to that. We definitely got to talk about how you can approach relief pitcher. It's not, there's plenty of it. And I think, you know, this format, 12 teams, two relief pitchers per team, and Sparps in the equation, there will be closers on the waiver wire all year long. They might not be great, but they'll get you some saves. There won't be Sparps necessarily on the waiver wire. But one of my rules of thumb when you're drafting is just thinking, okay, what am I going to be able to get on waivers? And how many starting pitchers are you going to be able to pick up throughout the year on waivers? I mean, I think you'll be able to get plenty. But you won't be able to stream two-star pitchers as much as you used to because the schedule has changed and the games are more spread out and you just won't have as many two-star pitchers. Plus, you know, with all the caution, and some teams are going to have six-man rotations for some portions. They baby their younger pitchers like the Padres did last year. Feels like two-star pitcher streaming is not as good as it used to be. So that's another reason to invest in reliable starters that you're good with, even with one start weeks.
What makes you feel like you're going to be able to get plenty of pitchers you can count on off the waiver wire?
What makes me feel that way?
Yeah.
I don't know that you'll be able to get plenty of pitchers you can count on for a full season, but I think there'll be.
But you're confident in your ability to play the matchups.
Yeah, well, yeah, play the matchups or pick up a hot hand and get 3 good weeks out of a pitch or something. Yeah, and I feel like at the beginning of the year there'll be guys that emerge that we weren't really expecting, and
there will be a few, but there will be many, many more hitters, at least if this year plays out sure. Like the last couple have.
For sure, and this is a shallow enough format where you can have. You can be lacking at hitter on draft day and make up for it. I don't know that I'm going to go. I would not have taken Lucas Giolito over Altuve, Aaron Judge, but that's kind of nitpicking one pick because, like I said, there were like seven hitters that went after Giolito. But okay, fine. If I could be a little bit more high end here, am I taking DeGrom over Arenado? I don't know. I mean, how freaking good is Arenado? So consistent. You don't have to worry about steals.
I hear you. And my rankings right now show Arenado over DeGrom. I'm sure they show all of those hitters ahead of Giolito. I am really at a crossroads here where I'm not sure if I need to just kind of overhaul the top of my rankings to better reflect the way I actually want to approach it, because it just feels so wrong to have those guys ahead of them.
So, but here's what I would say is last season, the two number one and number two starting pitchers, Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole, were just so much better than everyone else at any position, pitcher or hitter. After that, you know, you had Zach Greinke at number three, 615 points, Steven Strasburg, 610. And then you had a couple of guys in the 600, 590 range. There were, I believe, 12 hitters who scored at least 600 points last season. And so, you know, when we talk about like in this era where, or in this scoring format in particular, you'll see a lot of really high end point totals from pitchers, but the hitters still generally outperform the pitchers, you know, at the high end. So,
yeah. That, I mean, that's true. It's just what the replacement level, that's probably not a good term to use because of how it's become known in baseball analytics community, but you know, what passing up a high end hitter leaves you with versus what passing up a high end pitcher leaves you with. And I mean, I don't want to make this all me focused and I don't want to go out of turn here, but like if if we look at the way my hitting turned out, my starting lineup, having invested four of my first six picks in pitchers, I mean, I think it really speaks to what I'm talking about.
Okay, let's go for it then. What do you got?
Okay, so my catcher is Mitch Garver. Could be number one this year, was one number one on a per game basis last year. My first baseman is Yuli Gurriel. Probably the riskiest choice of my lineup, but I mean, he was a must-start player last year. Jonathan Villar, same thing. Jeff McNeil, I mean, everybody wants him as a starting second baseman. I happen to have him at third because that's where he fits best, but it gives me some flexibility if I need it. Marcus Semien, my shortstop. I mean, he almost won MVP. Cody Bellinger, he did win MVP. Michael Brantley, obviously a high-end outfielder, especially in this format. David Dahl, everybody's favorite breakthrough candidate every year, and he had a good he performed well when he was healthy last year. And Jordan Alvarez, who was performed up there with the top five hitters in baseball from the time he got called up last year. So like that's, and then my bench, I have JD Davis, who is my favorite breakout candidate, and I think the safest of all my breakout candidates, and Gio Urshela, who I happen to like a lot as well. So, you know, even if Gurriel doesn't pan out, I move Bellinger to first base. I get JD Davis in my lineup in the outfield. Let's say Jonathan Villar doesn't work out. I move Jeff McNeil to second base. I get Gio Urshela in there at third base. Like, I have a hard time seeing how this is going to fall apart on me.
I have a very easy time seeing how your entire team falls apart. You have a team and your pitchers are the same way. You have a team that basically just did it in 2019. Look at your pitchers. You have Bieber, Giolito, Aaron Nola, and Brandon Woodruff. Those are the four guys you built your team around. None of them, except for Nola, have more than one good year. Now, it's part of that is youth. I get that. But we see variability in performance too often. Marcus Semien, you made the case for Marcus Semien. You didn't make the case against Marcus Semien, which is the rest of his career. You know, you've got a bunch of guys that, like Mitch Gar, you have a bunch of guys.
You could always, Chris and I just went through an exercise for the top 200 players where we literally made a case for every single one and a case against every single one. You can obviously make a case
but
against
your
every
case
single
for,
player that every person drafted.
Your team is great in 2019, but for every other year before that, your team is last place, basically. Like,
okay. Okay.
But, so there's a lot of risk like in your lineup and your pitching.
I believe in them. And the ones I have the biggest doubts about, Gurriel and VR, I gave myself a backup plan. So I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, you don't like these players, pick different ones. But I do like them and I feel good about it.
You know what, though, Scott? To me, it's more like going with this strategy. I don't care so much that your hitters are risky. I think we just proved with Heath's team that from last year you can get by. I sort of wish that your pitchers were a little more proven in Bieber, Giolito, Nola and Woodruff, just that group of four with your first six picks. I feel like obviously there's a scenario where they're amazing, they're all amazing, but it doesn't
they
usually
probably
work
won't
like
all
that.
Be amazing,
right?
As Chris just talked about earlier, that's why, like, before I was thinking, okay, maybe I could just get three. In the past, I thought maybe I could just get two. But the thing is, if you do that, you have to really bank on them all hitting, and you can't do that. You have to overdo it. At least that's how I've
mm-hmm. right. You
that's
have
how
to
I've come to approach
it.
So yeah, I'm not counting on all four of them being great. If they are, then yeah, I have a huge advantage. But they probably won't be.
If they are, then if three of them are
I actually
great,
have five. My fifth guy is Sonny Gray.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have gone one more. Right, another guy who 2018 wasn't so great. But, okay, look, if you get three of those five pitchers pan out, then like you'll be able to make up for your hitting. Even if your hitting's not that good, you'll be able to make up for it. So I understand the philosophy there. I just wanted to say it's not such a slam dunk, I guess. But all right, let's move on to a different topic.
I can't guarantee I will win this league. I agree with that. Yes. Yeah. But I do think I'm in a good position to do so.
Real quick, your thoughts on Gerrit Cole going number two overall behind Mike Trout?
I wouldn't do it. Even as somebody who is trying to make this considerable investment in starting pitching, I think the top five hitters are so far ahead of everybody else, with the exception of Ronald Acuna, who doesn't stand out in plate discipline the way the other four do. And so he's obviously great, but in this format, I'm not sure he's as much of a standout. And that's why I do have Gerrit Cole going ahead of him. But the other five, including the other four, including Mookie Betts, would be my top four players off the board.
Marcus Semien actually scored as many fantasy points as Ronald Acuna last year.
Yeah.
In this format.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So
I think Bregman was better than Acuna in this format. Several other players who we don't normally consider in that.
Bregman was the best hitter. Bregman was the best hitter in this format, and Anthony Rendon was third. Now, Christian Yelich and Mike Trout missed most of this month of the season.
Yeah. Right. So, next question. This is a points league. By the way, if you're new to points leagues, plate discipline is very important because you get a point for a walk and you lose half a point for a strikeout. So, that's crucial. Doubles and triples help. They don't count in roto in most formats unless you're playing total bases. They count for 2 and 3 points respectively here. Steals are worth 2 points. So those do count, but you don't need them. So with that said, any question at all about Mike Trout being number one overall? And really the only reason why he wouldn't be is 114, 140, 134 games in his last three seasons.
Yeah, if you think Yelich is just better, then I could see taking him instead. But I think that's a leap I'm not willing to make, especially with him coming off pretty significant knee injury himself.
Yeah, I think the biggest gap between the two of them is probably plate discipline. I think, you know, Yelich will steal more bases than Mike Trout will, but Yelich is going to strike out about as much as Trout does. Both of them are pretty good in strikeout rate, but, you know, closer to average. But Mike Trout, you know, has a very good chance to lead the majors in walks in any given year. Whereas Yelich isn't quite at that point, although it's possible that pitchers see him now as a 50 homer guy, which is what he was on pace for, and start to treat him with even more fear and respect.
Okay. Next question. Was George Springer a reach at number 17 overall?
Yes. I mean, just going by ADP, yes, he performed up to that level last year. So if you're just especially high on George Springer and don't want him to go to somebody else, then maybe that's what you do. But I would not take him that early.
And talk about a guy who never plays a full season. He doesn't really get dinged for that as much as, you know, a lot of guys. And part of that is like in 2018 and 2017, he missed 22 games. He played a full season in 2016. Last year, he missed 40 games. 2015, he missed 60. So, you know, he's kind of been just injury prone enough that there you can probably ding him just a little bit.
Yeah, Springer, 17th overall, is the first pick that really jumped out to me. Like, that was interesting. He's 30, you know, and he's coming off a great year. He batted 292 with 39 home runs in 122 games. I like him a lot in this format. This is another point I'll make. If you get a leadoff hitter, because plate appearances are very important in points leagues. This is why guys who sit for lefties in a weekly points league, they're going to hurt you. They're just not going to score enough points. You need plate appearances. George Springer bats leadoff for a team that could lead baseball in runs scored. And I know I always try to do 155 games, but I'll do 162 because Baseball Reference does that, and I didn't feel like doing the math by myself. Over the last four seasons, per 162 games, he's been on pace for 123 runs scored and 96 RBIs, which is incredible for a leadoff hitter. So Springer's a great points league option when he's healthy, even if he's not as good as he was last year. But I still think that's more of like a third round pick. 17 and overall was early.
That point is something to keep in mind with Mookie Betts. Dodgers have a great lineup, but the Red Sox pretty much every year lead baseball in plate appearances. Part of that is they have a great lineup. They also always have really, really high on base percentages as a team. And Mookie Betts was their leadoff hitter. So you should expect with the Dodgers, the drop-off won't be as significant. But, you know, it could probably be 30 fewer plate appearances than he would have gotten with Boston, which isn't nothing.
Not nothing. You're right. Was Fernando Tatis a steal at 51st overall, round 5 for Tatis?
It's a value I feel comfortable with. You know, I have him on my bust list based on where he usually goes in the second round. And he only goes in the second round in a roto league. That's obviously what the ADP values we refer to are usually referring to. Because of the contribution he's going to make in steals. Anybody who has a chance of making a significant contribution in that category gets moved up by like two rounds or more if there's if that's able to happen, if they're not already a first rounder just as is. So I don't know that I'd call it a steal, because I think similarly capable hitters were going in the same range. Let's see. Jordan Alvarez was who I took a couple picks later, and in this format, he was better than Tatis last year. Gleyber Torres, who's considered a high-end second baseman, went in that same round.
Yeah, no, this is a great
round. So, yeah, it was fine, Chris but Bryant. I don't know that I call it a steal.
You're right, and that's just a product of all these pitchers getting pushed up so far. But Gleyber Torres and Nelson Cruz, Chris Bryant, Josh Donaldson going in that round. Donaldson, I don't know, that might be a little early.
Yeah, I don't like that one.
Yeah, but look, if things go right for him, he could certainly live up to that. So I was thinking, yeah, like a leadoff hitter on an elite lineup, which would be Springer, Betts, DJ LeMahieu. Who's going to lead off for the Twins?
Max Kepler, I think, did a lot last year. He doesn't make sense as a leadoff hitter, but just going by their behavior last year.
He's a pretty high on base guy, isn't he?
No, he's a low strikeout guy, but not a high walk guy. I think he had like a 330-ish on base percentage last year.
Yeah, well, right now, I mean, Roster Resource has Kepler, Polanco, Cruz, Donaldson, Rosario, Garver, with Arias, Sano, and Buxton at the end. Like, I'm just saying, a guy who's going to get up a ton, maybe Kepler doesn't lead off against lefties, I don't know. It's just something to keep an eye on in points.
Yeah, Garver seemed like he did a lot.
Okay, so maybe that team doesn't matter, but it's a sneaky way to gain more points. Okay,
336 on base percentage for Kepler last year.
Yeah, and that's something to keep. Like, the Twins have an obviously great lineup, but you know, their plate appearances could be lower because they don't necessarily have a ton of those high on base guys, and that's what turns your lineup over more than even scoring runs is not making outs. Outs are a finite resource; they are the resource when you're batting, and so the fewer outs you make, the more opportunities you get. Even if you know, the Twins are going to score a ton of runs, but their lineup won't turn over quite as often.
All right. Can you win in a points league with this team? This is Mark Barry, his team. He went very hitter heavy. Ronald Acuna, let's see what pick he had. I think he had the sixth pick. Scott, help me out. Mark Barry, eighth pick.
He had
sixth pick.
Sixth pick. Right. Yeah.
There we go.
Yep.
Ronald Acuna, Jose Ramirez, Jose Altuve, Chris Paddock, Yu Darvish, Shohei Ohtani, Eloy Jimenez, Mike Soroka, Carlos Santana, who's a very, very good points league first baseman, Kyle Schwarber, McCullers, Jorge Polanco, Dustin May, Salvador Perez, Justin Turner, blah, blah, blah. His pitching staff, like he's anchored by Acuna, Ramirez, Altuve. His pitching staff is Paddock, Darvish, Soroka, McCullers, Dustin May, Michael Kopech, some high upside guys. Chris Archer.
Ohtani. You missed Ohtani.
Oh, Ohtani. Yeah.
If I was ranking them in terms of how I ranked them this year, I would go Chris Paddock, Yu Darvish, Chris Paddock, Yu Darvish, Mike Soroka, and Shohei Ohtani. And then Lance McCullers, who obviously has a lot of upside as fifth guy. I mean, he didn't shortchange the pitching staff there. Those are four of those guys are in the class of pitchers that I feel like definitely have high end potential. And McCullers is in the smaller group of pitchers that I think at least shows the potential to be a high end pitcher.
So are you comfortable with this? It's interesting. You guys drafted back to back. You took four pitchers with your first six picks. He took three hitters with his first three picks.
Yeah. But then were the next three pitchers?
Yes. So, okay. Let's talk about Ohtani and explain how he's going to work.
Yeah, I've been avoiding him.
This is his least valuable format, right?
Anything weekly.
I don't know that points versus roto makes a big difference, but weekly versus daily makes a huge difference. Yeah.
Well, he could be an elite rates guy, but you're never going to get a two-start week from him, basically.
Yeah, not very often. Yeah.
That's why I kind of skipped over him when I was doing this exercise, so I apologize for that.
But I also don't know. Like, Joe Maddon has at least made some noises about changing the way he approaches Ohtani from the way the previous regime did. Things like letting him hit on the days he's pitching. I don't know if that was just him talking, and maybe when the minds get together, he'll be won over to a different way of thinking. I honestly don't know what's going to change for Ohtani. I don't know when he's coming back as a pitcher. I don't know how much he's going to hit at the start of the season when he's in the final stages of rehabbing this Tommy John surgery. There's just I feel like there are even more questions surrounding him this year than last year. He is going to pitch some this year, and I think that's where he's going to have the most impact in fantasy. But when and how much you'll be able to rely on him, I'd be afraid to take him as like my number four guy, and you're only going to get him as your number four guy if you're heavily investing in pitching.
But each week, if you have Ohtani, you have to decide I'm using him as a hitter or a pitcher, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
And this is not, I mean, for him to be a sixth round pick, I think that's just too early. There's almost no chance he's going to be an everyday hitter, right? If he's pitching at all, he's not going to be an everyday hitter.
I mean, he wasn't last year even when he wasn't pitching at all. So.
And he's utility only.
Right.
Ooh, yikes. Okay. So those are some of my more general questions. Let's get into the draft. We'll go round by round here and just give some quick thoughts. Mike Trout, Garrett Cole, Christian Yelich, Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, Ronald Acuna. Five outfielders. It's so funny that it's a three outfielder league. You'll have plenty of outfielders on waivers, but we've been saying this for a few years. Outfield tends to be sort of a top heavy position. You still have some of the best hitters. So I don't think you have to worry about position scarcity when it comes to those elites, right? Plus, Bellinger's first base eligible, which is nice.
I do worry in this format about filling my outfield up too soon because so many of my late round targets that are hitters are outfielders. So many are corner infields too. So I don't know. I guess it's deep everywhere, and maybe I shouldn't worry about it so much. I could certainly fill up third base too soon, and then not be able to draft when I want.
And third base, you could go into it on draft day saying, well, it's so deep, I'll wait. But it won't be deep on the waiver wire because all the good ones are pretty much going to get drafted, I think, right? Because they're going to be utility and backups. They're just too good.
Without accounting for the unknown, I would be inclined to say yes to that. But stuff is going to happen. Players we don't even see coming are going to appear at that position, I'm sure, just like any other.
Sure. Okay, so five outfielders and Garrett Cole to start, with one of those outfielders being Bellinger, who's first base eligible. Seventh pick, Lindor, Verlander, Bregman, DeGrom, Scherzer, Arenado.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, DeGrom over Scherzer isn't how I do it, I don't think. But I haven't actually been in a position where I had to make that decision. And when push comes to shove, I might be a little scared of Scherzer's health status to end last season.
Is there a big difference in this points format between Francisco Lindor and Trevor Story? Because these two guys are basically back-to-back in a lot of roto picks or a lot of roto drafts very close. Whereas in this draft, Lindor went 7th overall and Story fell to the 3rd round. He went 28th overall. And you look at their fantasy production, their fantasy points, very, very similar. In fact, Story was 14 points better than Lindor, and the plate appearances were pretty similar, almost identical. So is that a mistake, Scott? Should Lindor and Story be closer together, or is there a bigger gap in this format?
No, they should be closer together. I mean, like you said, with pointing out the points discrepancy last year, in this format, it's very easy to tell exactly how much any player meant to anyone. All the contributions just get put into one point total, and that makes for some easier analysis.
Sure.
But yeah, they're basically the same last year, and neither did anything that strikes me as greatly out of character. I do rank Lindor ahead of Story because I always tend to prefer the lower strikeout guys. I feel like there are fewer things that can go wrong for them, and I'm not totally sure we've seen Lindor's ceiling as far as batting average goes, but they're basically the same.
Okay. So again, the last six picks of the first round were Lindor, Verlander, Bregman, DeGrom, Scherzer, Arenado. Go to round two. We got Walker Buehler to Lance, who took Arenado. So he starts Arenado, Buehler. Freddie Freeman to Chris. Freeman and Scherzer for Chris to start things off. Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, George Springer, Mike Clevinger. Chris, we have Buehler, Freeman, Soto, Rendon, Springer, Clevinger. By the way, you don't have to comment on every six picks if you want to just keep going, but if anything jumps out, go for it.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting that Buehler seems to get grouped in with the big four a little more often. You know, he's number five in ADP. In this one, he goes, and then there's four picks between him and the next guy, who is Mike Clevinger. So, you know, I think that's interesting. He is probably my favorite pitcher after the top four. I think the depth of his arsenal gives him room to grow even beyond what he was last season. And what he was last season, especially from May 1st on, was pretty incredible. So I think it's interesting. I don't know if I like it or dislike it, but
I've noticed it too. And I've wondered why that was, why Buehler seems to be kind of the trendy number five SP pick, because he's not for me. I have Clevinger and Bieber ahead. I may even have Sale ahead.
And so I find the Buehler versus Clevinger, because I don't think you're alone. Clevinger is kind of the guy that people either have him fifth or sixth, or they have him like 10th or 11th. And so there does seem to be some disparity there. And he's coming off 126 inning season. He, I think, has only thrown more than 160 innings once.
Threw 200 2 years ago.
Yeah, but I think that was kind of an outlier for him. And, you know, Buehler, I think from June 1st on, basically had identical numbers to Clevinger's full season last year. And so it could be a situation where Clevinger is getting credit for not finishing his season, like not completing his whole season. And Buehler is kind of dinged for circumstances that were somewhat beyond his control, with the Dodgers limiting his exposure in spring training and then kind of working him in a little slower in May. He got off to a slow start for what I think are pretty good reasons. So he is probably the guy I could most easily see taking that big leap forward.
Well, I do think the pitchers in round two are fascinating. Buehler, and then again, Freeman, Soto, Rendon, Springer. Then we get Clevinger, 18th overall. Then Jose Ramirez, a little Cleveland Indians run here. Then Shane Bieber, Chris Sale, Steven Strasburg, Jack Flaherty, and Patrick Corbin. So it's funny to see some of these names in the second round. Mike Clevinger, 18th, Bieber, 20th. I get it. They were awesome last year, but is that legit? I mean, should these guys really be second round picks?
I made the Bieber pick, so
you made the Bieber pick and you made the Giolito pick. I know, and again, great hitters being passed up here.
I mean, the Giolito pick was more of a stretch than the Bieber pick or these other starting pitcher picks here in round two. These guys have been second or third rounders, I think, at every single draft across every format I've done. And so, there are cases you could make against any of them. Like I said, there is for any player you could possibly draft. And maybe that might compel you to pass them up at this price tag and just go to the next rung of the pitcher ladder. But for me, the reason why I took Bieber is because I know I want several. I don't want to start at such a low rung of the pitching ladder that it then runs out before I filled all the pitcher spots I want to fill.
Okay, so the pitchers in round two are Buehler, Clevinger, Bieber, Sale, Strasburg, Flaherty, Corbin. The hitters are Freeman, Soto, Rendon, Springer, and Jose Ramirez. To round three, Greinke, J.D. Martinez, Trey Turner, Trevor Story, Lucas Giolito, Jose Altuve. That's your first six of round three. Greinke, Jose, or J.D. Martinez, Turner, Story, Giolito, Altuve. Quick thought, Scott?
I mean, the pick that stands out is the one I made, Giolito. The hitters seem like great values in here in the third round, and I could totally understand why the people went for them. And this was the point in the draft where I was declaring I'm doing something different this time. It feels wrong. It hurts. The hitters still available are guys that in another time I might have considered first round picks. And here I am taking Lucas Giolito, who, as good as he was last year, it's not like he was in Cy Young contention. It was a statement pick for me, and people want to trash it. I can totally understand, but there was a reason behind it. And if I had to do it over again, I would.
By the way, Trey Turner, people might be wondering about his value in this format. He's still pretty damn good in this format. I think last year I was taking him in the second round. This year, third round, because the pitchers are going earlier. But Trey Turner was tied for second in fantasy points per game at shortstop behind Alex Bregman. He was tied with Tatis, Bogarts, and Marcus Semien. So he's still plenty good in this format. The hitters are just great values here. So after Altuve goes, Aaron Judge, Bogarts, Bryce Harper, Rafael Devers, Charlie Blackmon, and Anthony Rizzo. I mean, is there anyone there that you don't like? Judge, Bogarts, Harper, Devers, Blackmon, Rizzo.
I'm a little wary of Xander Bogarts being picked like among the second group of elite hitters, just because 2019 was a new level for him. And you can say the same thing about Rafael Devers. But I don't know if the underlying data quite backs up what Xander Bogarts did last season.
It doesn't, as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
it was an increase of 10 home runs from his previous high of 23. He went to 33, and that was with basically the exact same batted ball profile.
Yeah.
So I hear you. I think ranking him at this spot at shortstop makes sense because you have to put somebody there, but I would rather pass him over for the other potential high-end options at the position.
Can I just tell you who my favorite shortstop is right now, as I'm still early in my... Somebody you pick, Chris. Carlos Correa. He's being knocked down way too far. You took him 83rd overall.
Yeah, I love the value. I've drafted a ton of Carlos Correa. There's partially there is the concern about the Astros and the banging scheme and whether their numbers are legitimate, but we've talked about that enough. I'm not really worried about it. The concerns with him are obviously the health. He has had real trouble staying healthy, and a lot of it has been recurring midsection injuries. I think last year was a rib injury, but it's back. Been back in the past.
Back, and, yeah.
You know, back injuries, he's only 25, but back injuries can have the effect of prematurely aging you. Now, that being said, especially in this format where batting average and stolen base don't matter quite as much, he has played at an elite level in two of the last three seasons. He's only played 75, 110, and 109 games in that stretch. But in 2019 and 2017, he absolutely played at the kind of level that you're looking for from really a second or third round pick. And so for me, it's a bet at 83rd overall that he can stay healthy for 145 games. And really, then there's not that much difference between him and Xander Bogarts. Carlos Correa is probably better.
Yeah, I think it's a good gamble to take. And let's do two more rounds here, guys, and we'll read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Round four, Blake Snell, Clayton Kershaw, Luis Castillo, Luis Severino, Pete Alonso, Charlie Morton. So that is the first six picks of round four. Four of them are pitchers. Snell, Kershaw, Castillo, Severino, five of them, sorry. Severino and Morton, and one hitter, Pete Alonso there. And then, look at all the pitchers in this round. Holy cow. So after Snell, Kershaw, Castillo, Severino, Alonso, Morton, you have Paddock, Nola, Ketel Marte, Syndergaard, Stanton, and Javier Baez. Anything jump out about round four, Scott?
Well, I think if I was going to break the pitcher run for a hitter, Pete Alonso would not be the one I'd do it for, especially in this format where you don't benefit as much by him having an outlandish home run total if he were to repeat that, which there's some skepticism whether he will or if he's more of like a 43 homer guy than a 53 homer guy. But, you know, he's not going to carry you in a category. It's not that discussion in this format. It's just what the overall production adds up to. And while Alonso's was certainly good last year, any regression may drop him to more of a level like we see from a Tommy Pham or something like that. So I would have gone for Ketel Marte over him. I probably would have gone for even Jordan Alvarez over him, who went in the following round, round five.
The only thing with Alvarez is he's utility only, and in this format, it's even harder to fill a utility only player. About those pitchers in that run, do you know who the number seven pitcher in this format was last year?
Off the top of my head, no.
Well, let's see. It was somebody in this
among this group.
It was Morton.
Clayton Kershaw. It was the number 10 pitcher.
Oh, okay.
In this format. I think they're both really good values. Obviously, I think Clayton Kershaw is a great value because I took him at the beginning of the fourth round. But Charlie Morton going where he's going in every single draft, there's one knock against him at this point because he's stayed healthy for 3 years in a row. The knock against him is he's 35, and that's a pretty big knock. But I'm just not sure, given how good he's been the last two seasons, given the fact that he's made 28 starts in three straight seasons. I think one of them, some of the starts came in the minors, but those still count as far as being able to do it. He is, I think, just being flat out undervalued across the board.
I don't know, man. Like, look at the innings, though. 146 and two-thirds, 167, 194 and two-thirds. That doesn't really feel like a guy who's been able to stay healthy. Because 2018, he kind of faded down the stretch and, you know, 167 innings. Last year with the 194 and two-thirds, that was by far a career high. So he's probably, you know, he's awesome. That's obvious. But I just don't want to make, I don't want to make it seem like he's been healthy three straight years because he really hasn't been.
But but that's the thing is he has. Like, he made 28 starts in 2017. He averaged nearly six starts per inning in the majors. He made 30 starts in 2018. It's so hard to know whether it was he faded down the stretch or he just had a bad month. But what he did in 2019 was he came back and he was just flat out awesome, gave you an ace workload, gave you ace production. So I think the faded down the stretch in 2018 thing is, let's say it's unproven. Let's say I think it's hypothetical.
Okay, well, do you think, I thought you were done.
He was awesome in the postseason last year too.
Yeah, no, I like him. I like Charlie Morton. We all do, but would you have taken him? Who that went ahead of Morton, would you have taken Morton ahead of? We had Snell, Kershaw, Castillo, and Severino in this round.
I don't see a case for Luis Castillo over Charlie Morton. I'm sorry. Whatever. If that makes me the big villain of the fantasy baseball community, I know we all love Luis Castillo. He's incredibly fun to watch. It's incredibly fun to watch a guy who looks like Jack Skellington from The Nightmare Before Christmas throw 98-mile-an-hour fastballs, and that changeup is incredible, but he's not a better pitcher than Charlie Morton by any measure. There is no measure that we have that says Luis Castillo is better than Charlie Morton.
All right, fair.
If the biggest risk factor for Morton is age, what is it for Castillo? I guess the fact that his walk rate is kind of high.
Walk rate and just he hasn't been as good. Like, Charlie Morton's just been an objectively better pitcher, and so Luis Castillo needs to get better to justify the cost. Like, I think he's 14th in ADP right now at starting pitcher. He's not that guy yet.
It's hard to argue with that. So
I think
Zach, where did he finish last year?
I think he was 15th in roto leagues. You know, don't take it. Take me seriously, not literally.
I mean, to me, kind of sorting out who I prefer among this class of pitchers is just, it feels like such a nitpicky exercise.
Is there one that you particularly like and one that you particularly don't like?
I would risk is usually what steers me away from this guy in this range of pitchers, as opposed to seeing the potential to squeeze any more upside out of it or you know, degrees of good. So I think the one I like the least considering is I mean, Severino, we really have no idea how that's going to go after a season that was lost to injury and he came back. He wasn't throwing as hard. Maybe that's just because he didn't get a chance to build up as much. I don't know. But normally we would take that as a bad sign. So he definitely strikes me as the riskiest. That being said, he could win the Cy Young Award this year and it wouldn't fall out of my chair.
Mm-hmm. I think that Kershaw, with that freaking team, I don't see how he doesn't win at least 16 games. I know it's not a category that people like to chase, but Kershaw was just so consistent. He barely ever gave up more than 300 runs last year. His skills are not what they used to be, but he's going to go quality start and win a ton of games. So if he stays healthy. Okay.
Well, that's big F with him. Clayton, yeah,
it is.
Made 28 starts and one appearance. In his 28 starts, he went at least six innings 26 times.
Yeah. Amazing. Because he doesn't walk anyone and he goes mm-hmm. deep into games. Okay. Round five, our last round here. Marte, Trevor Bauer, Tatis, Glasnow, Alvarez, Darvish, Gleyber Torres, Berríos, Paxton, Nelson Cruz, Chris Bryant, and Josh Donaldson. Starling Marte, which is a very interesting pick in a points league, not his better format. Trevor Bauer, Fernando Tatis, Glasnow, Alvarez, Darvish, Torres, Berríos, Paxton, Cruz, Bryant, Donaldson. That's round five.
So this is where I start to like the value of the hitters more than the pitchers. Maybe not Glasnow. I would have given serious thought to taking him if he was still there at my pick in round five. He went just ahead of me. But even so, with the pitching I already had, I probably would have passed him up for Jordan Alvarez, who performed like a first rounder last year. And maybe it was a little too good to be true, but I don't think it was a lot too good to be true, unless you honestly buy the narrative that the only reason any Astros hitter was good is because they were banging on trash cans 3 years ago.
And
it makes sense in Alvarez's case.
It's worth noting, Tyler Glasnow was probably a little too good to be true last year, too. And well, we only saw 63 innings.
He was, inning for inning, he was the best pitcher in baseball. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Alvarez was great on the road, too, right? And I think it was not a home road thing for him.
I could look it up.
I'm looking it up right now. He had a 699 slugging percentage at home. He had a 605 slugging percentage on the road. However, he did have a huge batting average difference as well. 349 at home, 272 on the road, but really, really good everywhere.
Cool. There you go.
Okay.
I think I'm going to have a lot of shares in him because I guess it's just, maybe it's the fact he hasn't put together a full season. Maybe it's the Astro scandal, the DH only eligibility, but for whatever reason, he seems to be going much later than I would expect him to go, given just how overpowering he was last year. And I mean, you could say the same for Cruz. Maybe it really is just a DH only thing. Cruz tends to go two or three rounds later even. But of course, there's a huge age difference there that would lead me to prefer Alvarez.
Cruz went the same round. He went about five or six picks after Alvarez. And I kind of broke this down a few weeks ago, I think. Eventually, Alvarez will gain outfield eligibility. It'll probably be before, maybe around the All-Star break, because I looked at their interleague schedule. If there's no injury that thrusts him into the outfield, I think by the All-Star break, I would expect him to have five appearances in the outfield and gain eligibility. I can't sign off to that, but you know, I would say for the second half of your season, if you have Alvarez, you're going to have an outfielder. So let's finish the show with some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This is from Sam. Hey, Barney, Marshall, and Ted.
How I Met Your Mother.
Aren't they also, two of them are department stores?
Yeah.
Huh.
Mm. How about
Interesting.
That?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they named the characters what they named them.
Maybe. I mean, doesn't one of them fall in love with Macy? So I have the seventh pick in my...
I have no idea if that's true.
No, it's not.
He moved on quickly from that joke. He knew it was a stinker.
I have the seventh pick. See, when you move on quickly, though, I think it helps the joke, you know? I have the seventh pick in my head-to-head categories league. I'm leaning Bregman over Lindor, but I have not seen one mock or rating in which Bregman was higher than Lindor in a head-to-head categories league. What's the case for Lindor?
Stolen bases.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Pretty much it.
Yeah.
Who would you guys take?
Sorry for the teeth-sucking noise there, by the way. That was unfortunate. Apologize to everybody.
Who would you take, Lindor or Bregman?
I have Lindor ranked higher, but I've had some serious conversations with myself about whether or not I'm overvaluing Lindor.
I would love to hear the conversations between yourself.
Oh,
not right now.
You really wouldn't.
From David, grade the trade. It's a points league with 10 keepers. Give up Max Scherzer. Get Giolito and Hira.
I'm going to need to know how long you can keep those guys. Because if it's not more than 2 or 3 years, I don't think I like it.
I think I like it either way. I'll give it a B, just straight up. And if it is more of a long-term situation, I'll give it an A, probably.
Yeah, I'll go C.
From Joe, grade the trade. 16-team auction keeper league. Give up an $8 Woodruff for a $29 Corbin, who I packaged with a $31 Bryant for a $26 Bieber. So, give up an $8 Woodruff and a $31 Chris Bryant for a $26 Shane Bieber.
I love the Woodruff for Corbin part. I think I'd rather just keep Corbin and Bryant.
Yeah.
Especially in a 16-team league where, like, I'm not convinced. Scott, I know you do have Shane Bieber in a separate tier from Patrick Corbin, but I would rank them pretty similarly. And in a 16-team league, giving up two, no doubt about it, must-start guys, borderline elite guys, for one borderline elite guy just doesn't make much sense to me.
And I've already decided I'm going to have to rework those pitcher tiers. It's the same struggle I've been having with my rankings to better reflect how I'm actually behaving in drafts. I may just have to make bigger tiers at starting pitcher and skip one that I have at every other position to really drive home the point that there's a steep drop off happening. I don't know. I'm going to have to look at it again when 2.0 comes around.
Bieber was better than Corbin, but I don't know if the gap is reflected in their ADP, because I feel like there's like a 25 spot difference in their ADP. And that probably doesn't, especially because Corbin was dramatically better in 2018. Yeah, I mean, yeah, Bieber had more strikeouts and more innings, but pretty much everything else was the same. WHIP was a little lower for Bieber, too.
Bieber had so many like 8-inning starts. Like the guy's just he just gobbles up innings. He's so efficient. And that's really where he stands out from most of these other pitchers who put up similar ratios.
Dave in Brooklyn, longtime listener, first time emailer, having a very hard time deciding who to keep in my 12-team head-to-head points league. Keep four. I have Acuna and Soto so far, so now I'll pick two of these. It's a points league. Realmuto, LeMahieu, Moncada, McNeil, Correa, and Glasnow.
I'm picking LeMahieu and Glasnow.
I think I'm going Correa and Glasnow.
Goodbye, everybody. We'll talk to you on Friday. How's that sound?
I think we should just end it after goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.